Well, folks, buckle up because we've got a lot to cover today. We're diving into some pretty big news that's sending shockwaves through the political landscape and has major implications for the environment.
Yeah, today's a big one. The decisions being made are going to have ripple effects for years, maybe even generations to come, touching everything from conservation to how we remember a U.S. president.
Okay, so imagine, like, those classic American West landscapes, right?
Yeah.
You know, the vast deserts and towering mountains, the kind of places just full of history and natural wonder.
Those iconic vistas are now at the heart of this huge conservation push, a move that's causing quite a stir.
So here's the deal. President Biden has just created two brand new national monuments in California, the Chuckwalla National Monument and the Satitla Highlands National Monument. And get this, together they protect almost 1 million acres of land. 848,000 to be exact.
This is a big deal for a couple of reasons. First, they're part of this bigger vision, creating, get this, the biggest protected land corridor in the lower 48 states. It's called the Moab to Mojave Conservation Corridor.
Whoa, that's massive. Tell me more about this corridor. What's it all about?
Picture this. 600 miles of protected land, stretching all the way from Utah's Bears Ears National Monument to the California deserts. And it's not just about the scenery. It's about protecting the culture and spiritual heritage of the tribes who have called these lands home for, well, forever.
So it's not just about pretty landscapes. We're talking about preserving the history and cultural connections to these places, right?
Absolutely. It's about recognizing those deep ties between people and the land and why it's so important to protect those connections, you know, for future generations.
All right, let's get into the nitty-gritty. First up, the Chuckwalla National Monument. What's so special about this place? What makes it stand out?
Well, Chuckwalla is a unique blend of rugged beauty and ecological importance. Imagine hiking through the painted canyon of Mecca Hills, checking out unusual formations like Alligator Rock, and maybe even spotting a Chuckwalla lizard. That's where the monument gets its name.
Sounds like a nature lover's paradise. I bet there's a ton of biodiversity in those 624,000 acres, am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Chuckwalla sits right where the Mojave and Colorado deserts meet. It's known for having a huge variety of plants and animals. Over 50 rare species call it home. So this designation is going to be huge for protecting clean water and making sure these unique species have room to roam.
So Chuckwalla is like a biodiversity hotspot, and protecting it has a domino effect beyond its borders.
That's pretty wild. Now, how about Satitla Highlands National Monument? What's the story there?
Buckle up. This landscape is all about fire and fury. The Satitla Highlands are dominated by volcanoes. We're talking cinder cones, lava tubes, and even the world's longest known lava tube system. It's all clustered around the Medicine Lake volcano.
Volcanoes. Wow. Not something you see every day. Is this volcano still active, by the way?
Well, it's considered a sleeping giant. And get this, it's 10 times bigger than Mount St. Helens. But don't worry, it's dormant. But it's left its mark on the landscape. Those volcanic features I mentioned, they're actually vital for water, especially those aquifers formed by volcanic activity. They supply clean water to a big chunk of Northern California. Wow, so these volcanoes aren't just dramatic scenery. They're essential for the water supply of a whole region.
You got it. It's a cool example of how geology and ecology are connected and how protecting these landscapes has these huge, far-reaching consequences.
Both of these monuments sound incredible. But it's not just about the scenery, right? I heard they also protect important cultural and historical sites. What's the story there?
You're totally right. These lands have more than just ecological value. They're steeped in cultural and historical significance, with evidence of human presence going back centuries. We're talking about ancient trails, sacred sites, even petroglyphs, those rock carvings that give us a peek into the past. Protecting these areas means preserving these treasures for future generations.
It's mind-blowing to think that we can protect both the natural wonders and these echoes of history embedded in these landscapes. And get this, the Biden administration is doing all this while also promoting clean energy.
Right. I've heard that both monuments will allow for building transmission lines to carry renewable energy to cities in the West. That's right. President Biden is trying to find that balance, you know, addressing the need for climate action while also making sure we respect those who might be affected by these conservation efforts. But here's the thing. Not everyone's thrilled about these monument designations. Some see this as a way to block fossil fuel development in these areas.
Ah, so there's a political side to this story, too.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like there are some strong opinions on how these lands should be used and what the priorities should be.
Exactly. Those differing opinions are at the heart of the controversy surrounding these designations. It's not just a simple conservation versus development debate. It's about balancing everyone's interests. Local communities, energy companies, environmental advocates, everyone.
It's like a giant puzzle with no easy answers. So can you break down the legal tools President Biden is using to achieve these conservation goals and maybe shed some light on why they're causing so much debate?
Well, there are a couple of key legal tools President Biden's using to push his conservation agenda. One is the Antiquities Act. It's a pretty old law, actually, over 100 years old. It lets the president protect land that has historical or scientific importance.
So it's not a brand new tactic. It's got history behind it.
You got it. Presidents from both parties have used it to create national monuments. The other tool is the 1953 Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. They call it OCSLA for short. That one's more about offshore areas. It gives the president the power to say, hey, no oil and gas leasing here. And Biden's been using it to stop drilling along huge stretches of the U.S. coast.
So one law's about land, the other's about water. But they're both about conservation in the end. No wonder they're stirring up controversy.
Yeah, these laws give presidents a lot of power to shape environmental policy. And that often leads to pushback. Especially when those actions impact industries like, well, fossil fuels. It reminds us that environmental policy is complicated. You got to balance different interests and values.
It is fascinating how these legal tools are shaping things, both literally and figuratively. But let's get back to the monuments themselves. What about their specific features? What makes each one so unique?
Let's start with Chuckawalla. One of the things that makes it so special is the sheer variety of life there. Like we said before, it's home to over 50 rare species of plants and animals. You've got the desert bighorn sheep, you know, a classic symbol of the Southwest. They navigate those steep canyons. And then there's the Agassiz desert tortoise, just slowly making its way across the sandy flats.
That's like a real-life Noah's Ark for desert creatures.
And the plants, over 50 rare species. Thriving in this protected landscape. Each one has these incredible adaptations to survive in this harsh environment, extreme temperatures, drought conditions. They've evolved over thousands of years to handle it all.
True survivors. Now, what about Sitla Highlands? You mentioned protecting a volcanic landscape like that is key for water resources. Can you expand on that a bit?
Sure. The volcanic features of the Sitla Highlands are directly connected to the water supply for a huge chunk of California. Those volcanic aquifers we talked about, think of them like giant underground reservoirs holding tons of water. And they feed the Fall River Springs, the largest spring system in California and one of the biggest in the entire West.
Wow. It's all connected, isn't it? The health of these ecosystems has a direct impact on people and communities.
Exactly. These designations are a recognition that these lands and waters are inherently valuable for their ecological and cultural importance.
And speaking of cultural significance, these areas hold deep meaning for tribes and indigenous people, right?
Absolutely. The Sitla Highlands, for example, are sacred to the Pitt River tribe. The Medicine Lake volcano and the surrounding landscape hold deep spiritual meaning for them. Protecting this area is about respecting their cultural heritage and their relationship with the land.
And it's not just Sitla Highlands. The Chuckwalla National Monument also has those important cultural and historical treasures, right?
Oh, yeah. Chuckwalla protects ancient trails, sacred sites, petroglyphs. You've got geoglyphs and pictographs, too. They're like chapters in a history book, etched right into the land. These designations are about honoring that history, making sure those stories get passed down.
It's pretty powerful to think about these places holding not only natural beauty, but also these human stories going back centuries.
These designations recognize that these lands have more than just ecological value. They have cultural and spiritual value, too. And those values are often intertwined. The way indigenous people have lived with these landscapes for millennia shows their deep understanding of nature, their commitment to living in harmony with it.
It's like we can learn valuable lessons from the past to guide our conservation efforts in the present.
Their knowledge and practices are full of lessons for how we can approach conservation and stewardship in a way that benefits both people and the planet. It's about finding ways to live sustainably and respectfully within these ecosystems.
It's all about balance, isn't it? Balancing the needs of today with the needs of the future and figuring out ways to live in harmony with the natural world.
Exactly. And that brings us back to President Biden's legacy. He's making these bold moves to protect these incredible places. But as we've been talking about, he's also getting pushback from people who see conservation as an obstacle to economic development.
Right, that tension we talked about before, conservation versus economic growth.
It's a tricky issue, no doubt. But I think it's important to remember that true progress means finding ways to balance economic growth with protecting the environment. It's about solutions that benefit both people and the planet.
That's a tall order. But it seems like these monument designations are making us have these important conversations, making us grapple with these tough questions.
And that's a good thing. These conversations are necessary.
Well, these monument designations are definitely raising a lot of questions. What are some of the key arguments from both sides, from those who support and those who oppose these actions?
Those who support the designations, they often see this as a win for conservation, a crucial step in fighting climate change. They argue that protecting these large landscapes helps protect biodiversity, preserve natural resources like clean water, and fight the effects of a changing climate. They also highlight the cultural and historical importance of these areas, stressing the need to protect those treasures for future generations. And importantly, they point out the potential for these monuments to boost ecotourism and outdoor recreation, creating new economic opportunities in rural communities.
So for supporters, it's about conservation, cultural preservation, and even potential economic benefits. What about those who oppose the designations? What are their main concerns?
Well, those who oppose the designations often worry about the economic impacts, especially in communities that depend on things like mining or energy extraction. They argue that restricting access to these lands could hurt economic growth, limit jobs and development. Some also worry about too much federal control and the impact on private property rights. They feel these decisions should be made locally, not by the federal government. And then you have those who just disagree with setting aside large areas of land for conservation. They argue it hinders development and limits how we use natural resources.
So for opponents, it's about economic impacts, local control, and a different view on how humans and nature should interact.
Exactly. And it's important to recognize that these are complex issues with valid concerns on all sides. It's not about right or wrong. It's about talking to each other, listening, and finding common ground. Maybe there are solutions that can meet the need for conservation while also making sure there are economic opportunities and respecting local concerns.
Maybe these designations could even lead to innovation, new approaches to sustainable development and resource management. It's like a challenge to find creative solutions that work for both people and the planet.
That's a great point. Sometimes these tough situations can lead to positive change.
We've been looking at the big picture, but what do these monument designations mean for everyday people, for someone listening to this deep dive right now?
Well, I think it challenges us all to think about the choices we make, both as individuals and as a society. What kind of future do we want? What are our values when it comes to the environment, to cultural heritage, to economic development? These designations are a powerful reminder that we're all connected. Our actions have consequences, and we have a responsibility to take care of this planet.
These decisions are definitely sparking some important conversations about our relationship with nature and the legacy we leave behind for future generations. What about you? What are your thoughts on the long-term impact of these monument designations?
Well, it's always tough to predict the future exactly, but we can look at what's happened before, right? And current trends. When it comes to the environment, these designations could be really impactful. By protecting these big connected landscapes, we're creating these safe spaces for all sorts of life, helping to make sure those plants and animals, some that are only found here, can survive.
Yeah, like we're setting up these giant nature preserves, huh? Where things can thrive without the constant threat of development or having their habitats chopped up.
Exactly. And it's not just about what's inside the monument boundaries. Protecting these areas helps keep our water clean, And they can help fight climate change by storing carbon. Plus, they offer so many opportunities for scientists and for education. We can learn a lot from studying these ecosystems that haven't been messed with.
So it's like we're protecting them not just for their own good, but for the benefits they provide to us humans and the planet as a whole. It's all connected.
Exactly. And when we think about the culture and history, these designations can really help preserve the stories and traditions of indigenous people and other communities who have these deep connections to the land, protecting sacred sites, ancient trails, all those cultural resources. It's about honoring those connections and making sure those stories are passed down.
It's like weaving those stories into the very landscape, making sure they're never forgotten.
And those stories have a lot to teach us about how we relate to nature, about resilience, about living sustainably. They offer these great insights into living in harmony with our surroundings.
It sounds like these monument designations could have these ripple effects far into the future, impacting everything from how healthy our ecosystems are to how we preserve our cultural heritage.
And don't forget the economics of it all. Some folks worry about losing jobs in certain industries, but others see these designations as a chance for new economic opportunities, especially in ecotourism and outdoor recreation.
I can definitely see these monuments drawing people from all over, wanting to experience those landscapes, the wildlife, the cultural treasures.
Absolutely. And all those visitors mean new jobs, new businesses, more revenue for local communities. We've seen it happen time and time again with national parks and other protected areas. They become economic engines for the surrounding regions.
So maybe these monument designations could even lead to a more diverse and sustainable economy, one that's less about extracting resources and more about protecting and celebrating what makes these places special.
That's the idea. And that's a big reason why these designations are starting such important conversations. They make us think about what matters most, you know, what we value and what kind of future we want for ourselves and for the generations that come after us.
Well, I think we can all agree that these monument designations are much more than just lines on a map. They represent a whole mix of environmental, cultural, economic, and political considerations. They really challenge us to think about how we relate to nature and the legacy we leave behind.
In the end, it's up to all of us to decide what that legacy will be. Are we going to protect these amazing places, honor the stories they hold, and build a future that's both prosperous and sustainable? Or are we going to let them be degraded, exploited, and eventually disappear?
Those are some big questions for all of us to consider. And if you're interested in learning more, there's a ton of information out there. We've put together a list of articles, reports, and fact sheets that we think you'll find fascinating. You can find those links in the show notes.
Definitely check them out. There's so much to explore about these monument designations.
Until next time, keep those curious minds going.